Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction tribe? This is the podcast that when I started in business, I sure wish I knew Paul Waddell when I started this game, because I would fast track a lot of things. Why do I say that? He's built a tool that we call the digital pencil in my mind when he was giving me his pre-interview, and it's all about maximizing real estate in urban spaces. This penciler that you're going to learn about and Urban Sim will let you know if your project pencils out. He talks about how to design, simulate, and visualize your projects. When we talk about connecting technology to handshakes, man, this baby's in the middle, and I am pumped to have Paul come in and tell us his story. We're going to talk about how creating policy bundles for maximizing your real estate portfolio within your community, creating a master plan for feasibility for the tools within your world. And Matt, thanks for joining me again as my guest co-host. What do you think? Where are we going to go with this bad boy?
You know, just talking to Paul in that pre-interview, the first thing that popped in my head is I was like, man, this is the best thing since sliced subdivision lots.
Best thing since sliced subdivision lots. Lock yeah, and load. That's... Let's go into Studio AOC and have some fun with Paul. What's your favorite beverage?
All right. Favorite beverage. I guess I would say it's a nice Pinot from the Alexander Valley up a little north of the Bay Area.
Awesome. One particular brand that you want to give a shout out to the Art of Construction tribe?
Oh, Alexander Valley is my favorite.
Alexander Valley. I guess I know wine. I don't know them very well. So you're saying Alexander Valley is the brand of wine. I thought it was the
place. Also the place. Yeah. No, there's a vineyard by that name.
All right. What's the favorite place you've traveled?
That's a hard one, man. I've been to a lot of places, but one that left an impression for me, because I did it when I was pretty young, was a trip to Bali. Pretty cool place.
Wow. Give us one story from Bali.
Well, let's see. I was probably in my 20s when I did this, so very impressionable. And, went up to the top of the island, and, there were temples along the way and all kinds of interesting artwork, pretty weird artwork, actually. And then when I got out of the top and went into a restaurant and they wanted to serve me eels from the rice paddies, I was pretty put off with that stuff. That didn't look so great to me at all.
Yum.
The top of the mountain, he's painted the picture, weird artwork, and eating eels. All right.
I love it. It was great stuff.
Awesome. What's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos that you are definitely going to talk about with Urban Sim within the Art of Construction?
Well, when I have time for hobbies, it's probably mountain biking or trail running. I really like to get out. Bay Area has some great open space areas with trails, and really nice to get out there and just unwind a little bit, burn a little energy, and be out in nature.
Awesome. Well, tell us where you're at, your story, where you're from, and what led you to Urban Sim, Paul.
All right. Well, I got started as a planner, actually, urban planner, working in Texas and looking at urban development patterns and trying to figure out the impact of transportation projects and other infrastructure and where development was going. And I got pretty far into that topic and was asked at one point to do a consulting project in Honolulu. And I was living in Texas at the time. So the opportunity to do a project with Honolulu was a pretty attractive one. And so that's really where I started sketching out the framework for a model system that we've developed since then over the years, and it's being applied all over the world now. I've been a faculty member at Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, in the planning department. For quite a number of years, and started a couple of companies, one of which I sold to Autodesk back at the beginning of 2015. And the more recent one I started just 3 years ago, and it's Urban Sim Inc. And we're developing a lot of cool tools for real estate development and planning.
Awesome. So you're in Berkeley, California, professor at UC Berkeley. And then 3 years ago, you saw a need in the industry. What was the need that led you to create Urban Sim that we're going to go on a journey with today?
Yeah, well, so part of this goes back to work that I've done over many years, but you know, understanding major projects, major infrastructure projects, and how they impact real estate markets is a really hard problem. And increasingly, metropolitan planning is trying to coordinate infrastructure planning with things like housing affordability or greenhouse gas emissions and climate change kind of planning. So we're working a lot of the metropolitan scale, but I also got really interested in understanding real estate development much more deeply and getting down into the weeds, as it were, in terms of how do developers make choices about what's feasible to build on a site. And, you know, living in the Bay Area where housing affordability is a crisis, as it is in many other places, even in Denver and Boulder, right? I mean, housing is not cheap. So a lot of people are getting more concerned about what does it take to start moving the needle on housing affordability? And we started probing it by looking at, you know, what does it take to make a project pencil out on a site? How much does zoning impact that? So we started working on tools to evaluate that very rapidly and make it much more visible and help people that don't often talk to each other, like developers and planners, don't speak the same language often and don't really understand how the other world works as much as might be helpful. So we tried to start creating some tools to make that kind of translation and negotiation work more smoothly.
Awesome. So you've created a tool for feasibility of projects, right? And I want to set the stage, give credit where credit's due. Go check out the podcast with Hypar. We're doing these similar times. They're actually getting released next. And our awesome producers at Art of Construction, we make these all global and timeless, but want to connect the dots to where they come and go as penciler, as penciling in projects with Urban Canvas of the company Urban Sim. And there's several different awesome relationships we've met. And one of those is through Hypar, who, when Matt was the guest co-host who sits on the Art of Construction Council, was talking with Ian and Anthony on the Hypar podcast. They were going down this conversation and I raised my hand and say, these guys are going down somewhere that I totally understand where they're going. It's just the details of how to get there. And they're like, you got to meet Paul. So Matt, here we are. You're back at the guest co-host with Paul to talk through the feasibility of projects. So let's set the stage and let him take us on a journey with Urban Sim, huh?
Sounds great.
So let's first start with Penciler. And so you have two platforms, right, Paul? Am I understanding this right?
That's right. So Penciler and Urban Canvas.
Awesome. So platform. Penciler, if I'm understanding right, that does the site make sense, right? So that's that does it pencil out portion, correct?
Exactly.
And Urban Canvas is where is the market going, right? Because there's that what's in it for me and is the market going to crush me? Is that kind of right in a nutshell?
Yeah, that's right in a nutshell. You know, I would say also Urban Canvas is not only where's the market going, but how are major decisions that are being taken by transportation planning organizations or cities when they redo their general plans, how are those shaping the market?
So when you, I had a question for you, Paul. So when you were building these platforms, were you using ArcGIS or Autodesk or were these things created from scratch? How did you put these platforms together?
Well, we took a look at the existing technology and what tools we might build on and certainly looked at ArcGIS and their various products, and Autodesk products as well. But at the end of the day, we ended up deciding that we had to build it from scratch to have the kind of functionality that we needed, which was very customized, and we needed a lot of efficiency. We needed this to be really, really fast. So we ended up building it from scratch.
Wow, that's a big endeavor you jumped into there based on some of the stories I'm hearing through the Art of Construction tribe. Is it desktop tools, the cloud? How does it work as we've been trying to figure out how these tools plug into our day-to-day operations?
Yeah, so we had built some desktop tools before, and actually the company that I sold previously to Autodesk was based on a desktop platform. But we decided to move everything to the cloud when we started our new company and make sure that it was readily accessible to people, that they could just open up a laptop or an iPad or their desktop computer, open up a browser and immediately log in and start using it. So they didn't need any special hardware or software installation. They could just crank it up and log in and start using it. So it's a cloud-based platform.
Awesome. And I always like to ask, like, what are we solving here today? Like, what is the problem that you're trying to solve with Penciler?
Yeah, well, I mentioned housing affordability earlier, you know, so I could say we're trying to solve housing affordability. That might sound a little over the top. So, you know, I would back it down a little to say we're trying to do our part to help because, you know, housing development is hard. And, you know, you get a basic imbalance in a metropolitan market between the rate of growth and demand. You know, people are moving in, incomes are going up. In the Bay Area, of course, you've got all these stock options that are also influencing the market. So you've got a lot of things pushing demand, but then housing supply isn't keeping up. And there's a lot of debates about exactly what are the reasons for that. But certainly zoning has been fingered as a likely culprit in terms of cities that have restrictive zoning that might be preventing multifamily development or other types of development from happening, or the process for getting approvals takes too long. So we're tackling, you know, an effort to make it easier to rapidly evaluate development and make it more transparent to the city and the developer and the community, you know, what's feasible. And if you relax zoning, give a little bit of additional height, density bonus, if you will, to a site, you know, does it make that project feasible? Can you get more housing built and start to take the pressure off the housing market a little bit?
You know, I think that's an important point, Paul. It's, you know, when we were all in architecture school or planning program, you know, the key was the problem solving process. And so I think as design professionals, we're sort of ready to immediately jump in and try to solve the problem. But with years of experience, you start to learn, first, you got to get the correct data in place so that you're solving the right problem. And so, you know, there's some, you know, like GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. You know, you got to make sure that with the data that you're putting into your program is really the correct data. And so let's dive into that a little bit. Can you talk about, you know, building codes, zoning for the municipality? How does that get figured into Penciler?
Oh, sure. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You've got to have good information and it's got to be current. You know, some of the data that is required to do this sort of analysis is you've got to have good parcel data that's current. So you know the geometry of the parcel, you know the ownership, you know what's on the parcel today, you know how it's zoned. And then the zoning information is itself quite a can of worms because city zoning, to anybody that's looked at it in some detail or had to work with it, is like a labyrinth. You know, it's incredibly complicated. It's not easy to navigate. You often find that the zoning code is actually documented in a bunch of documents and PDF files sitting around somewhere. And then somebody that really understands zoning and how it works has to read all that stuff and interpret it to figure out what it actually translates into. And ultimately, it's a set of factors like how much do you have to set back from the front of the parcel for the building, from the side of the parcel, from the rear? How high can the building be? They use terms like floor area ratio, which is the ratio of the building square footage to the lot square footage. And, you know, how high a ratio can that be?
Well, you know, and it's like you say, it's building codes. I know when we first talked about it, you know, not only are you dealing with International Building Code, IBC, but you also were saying that you have IBC with amendments when you get into the actual municipality. So you're actually looking at how they've changed that code as well, too. Not only that, so, in the zoning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So so first of all, I like to say that that zoning is a highly standardized thing because every city has its own zoning code. So You know, everybody has their own standard, which means there isn't one. And so, you know, we have to harmonize that data across cities and translate it into a kind of like a Rosetta Stone so that we can understand what the zoning actually means in terms of what can be built in a site. And the building codes, those are often done at a higher level, like the state level. And so it's a little easier to manage the building codes. But you're right, we have to have all that data in place at the fingertips of a user and then be able to take action on it quickly, figure out, you know, to do a test fit, for example. What can you fit on that site? How many units can you put on it as it's a multifamily building? And then we also have to do financial analysis, what's called a discounted cash flow or a pro forma analysis to figure out, you know, how financially viable would that project be?
Well, you know, I going deeper dive into this, when we had the initial discussion, I was surprised that you're actually considering different data like impact fees, subsidies. You're getting into LIHTC, you know, low income housing tax credits. And I guess you originally started in affordable.
That's right. So we were actually invited by the city of San Francisco, the mayor's office of housing and community development, to participate in a startup and residence program. This is basically an incubator kind of strategy to get startups really engaged in helping to solve problems that the city faced. And so their problem was that they needed to rapidly evaluate sites for development feasibility for affordable housing. So in this case, they're saying, you know, let's take sites that might be public land or that they might have to acquire and then subsidize the development of housing that's below market rents. And so, you know, they had to deal with low-income housing tax credits and complicated financing and equity for those kinds of projects. So we built it initially to be able to accommodate that. It turns out that's the hardest thing you can do in multifamily. And so by doing it, we can also do projects that are fully market rate or any mixture of market and subsidized. Like inclusionary zoning is where the city will say, all right, if you want to develop multifamily housing in this location, you need to set aside 15% or whatever percent of the units as below market rate or subsidized units to make them affordable. So we can analyze any mixture of, you know, fully market to fully affordable to some fraction, and also ones that include commercial, you know, so mixed use types of projects.
And that is pretty powerful to be able to parse the profitability of a project at that level, because I think all the affordable housing developers that I know, that's their biggest challenge, is trying to figure out what's the magic mix that allows the project to be built so that you can get what the municipality wants.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, again, in the context of a project that's going to be subsidized to be constructed, it's going to be a money loser. You know, it wouldn't be built in the private market if it's affordable or has too high an inclusionary requirement. But then the city is having to figure out, you know, how much can we leverage out of our scarce resources to try to, you know, construct more units and make more of an impact on the housing market.
So a lot of different things this tool does. I'm curious, as you were building this out and figuring out, what was the hardest part of doing this?
Yeah, well, we were pretty naive when we started. We thought this was going to be a pretty straightforward thing, and we could just estimate the number of units with some really simple formulas. But after spending months with the architecture team and the financial analyst team that did this work operationally at the city, we realized that, no, we were actually going to have to generate a geometric layout algorithm, and that it would have to do constrained optimization. So we started digging into that problem. And fortunately, we've got a genius or two on the team that are really good software engineers and really good with geometry. And so we were able to construct an algorithm that lays out building floor plans in a way that meets the unit mix that's required by the user. So let's say you want 40% two-bedroom units and 60% one-bedroom units. It'll find the floor plan that maximizes the total number of units you can put on that site while meeting your unit mix requirements, meeting the zoning constraints, and meeting the building codes. And then it does a financial analysis on top of that. But that layout generator, that turned out to be really, really hard. And we think we've done something quite unique in doing it. We've had to add more and more building typologies to, you know, really maximize what you can build on a site and make it accurate. But yeah, that's most certainly the technically hardest part. The other really hard problem was something I've already mentioned, the zoning. You know, every city has different zoning descriptions and requirements. And so finding a way to encode all of that into a database and make it accessible to the user so they can just avoid having to have, first of all, you know, a legal expert that knows zoning on their staff to interpret it. And they can just launch right in and start evaluating. What can I do on the site? And what if I override the zoning and increase the density? Is it worth negotiating with the city over that?
So when did you release Penciler? And is it available for someone to step up and use it today?
Yeah, so we're just in the process of releasing it right now. We've got some cities in the San Francisco Bay Area that we've loaded data for. And we're also testing it in Vancouver. We have a project there with the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. And so we're starting it in Vancouver, and then we'll move to the Toronto region. So we're rolling it out kind of carefully and testing the market, trying to make sure that we anticipate what are the kinds of issues that we're going to encounter in terms of zoning data and other data, any other considerations that make it challenging. And we're just evaluating what the market looks like in these places. We're looking at, you know, architects and commercial brokers and, you know, developers as our primary users, but also cities. And so we're testing the market right now. But yes, it has been released, and we're trying to grow it as quickly as we can.
Awesome. And we make these shows global and timeless of solving big time problems, but using tools for those solutions. And this is being recorded in October of 2019, but many things that will bookend this of where we're going of building out this tool. So thanks for answering that.
Absolutely.
So in terms of user groups, I know you mentioned a few developers, commercial brokers, architects. I was wondering maybe if you could talk a little bit about citizens, because I imagine all of our audience is listening to the podcast and going, hey, that's all well and good, but my most difficult issues that I have are with, you know, people call them NIMBYs, you know, not in my backyard, bananas, build absolutely nothing near anyone. And so could you talk a little bit about how your tool, Penciler, might be used to assist a developer or someone like that with developing a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is an interesting topic because, you know, even the most pro-development people that think we need a lot more housing to be built and we need housing to be more affordable, when it comes to something that's right next to them, they quickly become a NIMBY, right? I mean, they don't want to see that project right next to them. So it's a pretty widespread problem, and a lot of projects die on the vine because, you know, either they can't make it through the permitting process and get city approval quickly enough, and the risks start to pile up and the holding costs start to pile up, or they get sidetracked with endless debates with feedback from the community that doesn't want to see that project. So we think that a tool like this, cloud-based, so anybody with a browser can access it, you know, could evolve into something that could help the city, the developer, and the community come to some convergence, because it allows you to see the project in context as a 3D building model. So when you generate different options, it'll generate not only a floor plan, but actually a 3D massing model of it. It's not high detail, so it doesn't look like a finished project. We've got technology that actually can generate a fairly detailed rendering of buildings, but we opted not to use it for this because the reaction that people tend to have if it looks too polished is that the project is already, you know, has left the tracks, you know, has left the station, and it's a done deal, and that leads people to really strongly react negatively to it. So what we wanted to do was create something where there's a sketchy representation. You can quickly experiment. It takes about, you know, a minute or less to create a building option. And so if somebody's asking questions about, well, you know, what would happen if we added an FAR of one, you know, or another floor to this building? What if we relax the parking constraints? You can create another option and look at the financials on it in less than a minute. And so it makes it possible that you could have different constituencies be able to see this and, you know, start to erode that kind of resistance. You know, the general public doesn't have a good idea of what a floor area ratio is. If you ask somebody, what does a building look like with an FAR of three? They look cross-eyed at you, right? I mean, people don't know those terms. And so they tend to think of anything that is being proposed for a project as being excessive for their neighborhood. But if you can see it in context in 3D with the background of existing buildings, it's a lot easier to say, okay, well, that kind of fits into the neighborhood. It's not a radical change in density. So I do think that visualization and the analytics can start to become more transparent and make it easier to have this kind of negotiation between the city, the developer, and the community.
I think that, you know, I mean, that's amazing, the richness of a penciler, but maybe we can hit sort of the reverse magnifying glass and jump out a little bit and talk about urban canvas.
Sure. Yeah. So the issue with penciler is that it's really focusing on what can you do on a site, and it's looking at it in the context of current market conditions. Like, what are the rents today? What are the development costs today? What would it cost to acquire a site and build a project? But often we're approached with questions like, well, what if I rezone a whole area of the city? If I upzone along a corridor, for example, you know, how much development would that generate? How much would it affect rents and prices? Would it start to bend the needle on housing affordability? Well, you can't do that on a site-specific development feasibility level. You really have to zoom out. You have to understand market context. And so that's what Urban Canvas is really about. I like to think of it as SimCity, but for real cities and with real plans. And so if you experiment with the zoning, if you experiment with the general plan, if you experiment with the transportation infrastructure, you can begin to see what the impacts of that are on where the market's going. Where is it going to put upward pressure on rents and prices? Or where is it going to start to move the needle enough with housing supply to start to at least slow down the rate of growth in housing affordability, crises like this? So it's like trying to represent a whole real estate market as a metropolitan connected real estate market. You know, markets don't stop at a neighborhood level. They don't stop at a city level. Real estate markets span a whole commute shed. You know, people are commuting across a metropolitan area, and they're having to make trade-offs between how far they have to commute and how much they have to pay for housing and what other amenities can they get. And so those are the kind of things that we capture in Urban Canvas, is that broader market context and what are the impacts of different kinds of changes the cities might make in their zoning and general plans, and in terms of building new infrastructure, how is that going to shape the market?
So where is Urban Canvas being used then?
So we've actually been at Urban Canvas a lot longer than we've been doing Penciler, and we've got quite a bit of take up. Just mentioning a few of the metro areas in the U.S. that are using it. They include San Francisco, Denver, Chicago, Detroit, Boston, Seattle, Phoenix, Philadelphia, Minneapolis, Honolulu. So it's covering right now, both in the U.S. and internationally, metropolitan areas that have about 80 million people in them. So we like to say we're making a big impact through, you know, touching a lot of people in terms of how to improve planning in their communities.
What's the, if you had to pick one thing, what's the hardest thing about building an application like Penciler or Urban Canvas?
Well, I mean, data is almost always the hardest part of this. I'd say probably 70% of the effort that we put into building these tools and making them applicable in some places is in the data. The other thing that's hard is, as it worked around the world, parts of the United States, the markets and the way they're structured are very, very different, and the kinds of data that are available are very different. So we've had to do a lot of work to modularize and make flexible our platform so that it can fit places, you know, that are as different as, say, Austin, Detroit, San Francisco, you know, and even internationally in places like Johannesburg, South Africa, Melbourne, Australia, Paris, France, and Vancouver, and Bogota, Colombia. Those are all very, very different kinds of places, and we've had to adapt the model and the framework to them.
Yeah, data is a big deal. We actually just had David Haynes, if you go back to show 161 of the director at Ideate Software, talking about the data explosion is a big part of where we're going with all this stuff to try to understand. And I love that your tool is cloud-based. So cool stuff with that.
Yeah, and you've talked a lot about the data, you know, parcels, buildings, the actual zoning for the municipality. What's kind of the toughest one for you to get your arms around as you're starting to put your model together?
Oh, let's see. I don't know that I'd say one is particularly the hardest one. It's really putting them all together and making them internally consistent. So we get parcel and building data often from tax assessor districts, and we have to match that up with zoning from the cities and make sure that that's all coherent and connected and works together. And then we have to get transportation information often from the regional transportation agencies, and then economic and demographic data from various sources, including commercial sources. And then real estate transactions, rents, prices, sales transactions. So it requires harmonizing a whole lot of data and making sure that it makes sense and works together. And then we start tracking that information over time. So it's, you know, any one of them have their own problems, but when you put them all together, it's quite a bundle. And we have to use some pretty advanced techniques and machine learning algorithms and such to try to make it all work together well.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about Urban Canvas. So kind of talk to us about what's behind it and how does Urban Canvas work?
Sure. So the way it works under the hood is that we try to represent statistically. We use statistical tools to try to represent how people make choices and how they make trade-offs when they make those choices. In the housing market, for example, I think I mentioned already that, you know, if you're a household with a particular income level and you know, you've got two adults and three kids and whatever your income level is and stage of life, you're gonna be looking at housing in terms of, you know, how much does it cost and what do you get? How long are your commutes if you buy a particular house in a particular neighborhood? What are the quality of the schools in that community or that school district? What are the other amenities and what's the social demographic mix in that community? And so you're making trade-offs among those attributes. And it turns out that a Nobel Prize winning economist, Daniel McFadden, kind of pioneered an area that we draw on pretty heavily that helps us analyze it statistically. And it's used a lot of market research as well to figure out if you introduce a new product with a certain set of features, how will different market segments adopt that product and how will it change market shares? So we use those kind of statistical tools to do this.
You know, in the pre-interview, we got a look under the hood at one of the, I don't know if it was an algorithm or a differential equation or whatever, and Devin and I were looking at it going, wow, you know, that's something we'd really like to dig into because that's where we live.
Yeah, I'm really into that kind of stuff. That I was dialed in on that scene.
It looked Egyptian to us, you know.
It had summation equation marks and so. Yeah, so that was a representation of one of these statistical models that I was talking about, and I'd say it's good bedtime reading, right? If you have insomnia,
Yeah. We would always say when we get into these kind of things, when you're working with specific consultants, you would always say, thank God someone likes to do that stuff because you know it's important and you're glad it's not you.
Right.
Hey, can you pick you know, we've talked about a lot of agencies. We talked about a lot of locations in the United States and around the world. Can you pick maybe one success story that you've had using Urban Canvas?
Sure, sure. So, you know, I think probably I'll pick my own backyard here, the San Francisco Bay Area. They started using this platform several years ago, and they needed a tool that would work with their regional transportation planning process and some state legislation that requires coordinating land use planning and transportation planning. And so they adopted it and they started using it. We helped them implement it and make it useful. And you know, they then had a quite good success in evaluating different plans that they were considering. And we even participated in some community engagement aspects of it, where we were doing 3D visualization and getting it out into public meetings. Some of those public meetings turned out to be pretty contentious, and there wasn't much time for doing visualization. But you know, land use planning and transportation planning tend to be pretty contentious topics. But they were able to discipline the process, I'd say, reasonably well, and use the data and the analysis that we were able to support them with to bring stakeholders together from very different perspectives. There were building industry association perspectives and advocates that wanted more relaxed development regulations in the suburbs. And so they were able to articulate a scenario in which they changed the policy assumptions and ran the simulations and looked at the same evaluation metrics for, you know, would this be a good package of policies to adopt? And then there were other advocates that were focusing on social equity, transit, and environmental advocacy. And so they came up with a different bundle of policies and evaluated them. And so, you know, I'd say it was a really good success story because, you know, first of all, they avoided lawsuits that they usually get. And they managed to get very different kinds of advocates from, you know, the far reaches of the left and right of the spectrum, all converging on using the same tools and data to have reasoned discussions about what they should do. And so, you know, I think it's a pretty good, healthy success story in how these kind of tools can be used and, you know, decisions that are generally pretty contentious.
That's big time stuff right there. And we would love to talk all day about these case studies that you're just getting going on this thing. And that case study is like mind-blowing of getting the far left and far right to come together, especially in these trying times with certain things going on. What we want to do to close this out, we do this on every podcast, is what is that one thing for contractors and affiliates to grow their business when it comes to setting up successful projects like you've learned by designing this tool?
Yeah, so I think I'll close by just saying, you know, reinforcing a couple of the messages that we've talked about. You know, the reason we have two platforms that we've talked about today is that we think it's really important to both understand the big picture and the context for development on a specific site by knowing, you know, where's the market going and how our policies and infrastructure plans and macroeconomic forces, how are they changing the conditions for development? And then at the other end of the scale, to be able to zoom all the way down to the parcel level, the site level, and understand in detail, but really quickly, what can I do on the site, conditioned on knowing the market forces and conditions around it? And so being able to zoom in and out, understand context, and rapidly evaluate development opportunities, that's what we think is going to make a big difference. And, you know, and then having it, all that data at your fingertips to be able to make decisions quickly. So that's what we're about, and hope others find it useful.
Awesome. What's the best way with the different tools you have? What's the best way for them to go learn more about your platform?
Come to our website. We've got documentation there. We've got a mailing list you can sign up for. Reach out to us at info@urbansim.com, and we'll be more than happy to follow up.
Awesome. So info@urbansim or theaoc.us, and we'll have a whole show notes specific to the conversation here that is just mind-blowing. Paul, we're such big fans, and thanks, Hypar, for making this introduction. And when we talk lessons learned, I know Matt's going to have a bunch to say, huh?
Absolutely.
Right. Well, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Awesome. Cheers, man. I got to raise my hand and say, wow, it's amazing how simple and easy he makes it sound to do something in today's world that is truly so complex and what drives projects to not come to fruition. Matt, kudos for putting this together and charging hard on meeting Paul and putting this together. Man, he didn't let us down, huh?
You know, it's the word comes to mind is brilliant. You know, I'm usually would say, well, that was gold. I mean, this is beyond gold. This is like maybe a chewy caramel center or chocolate in the middle of the gold. It is so interesting to me talking to Paul. And you start to, as you get on these podcasts, you start to weave this thread where you've got, you can see use an urban canvas, identifying an area, go down to penciler, and then once you identify that this opportunity is perfect, then jump into HIPAR. So it absolutely blows my mind that there are folks out here doing this type of work that has immediate applicability to what we do in the art and architecture and construction industry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And as we've kind of found our vein here is when I started this thing, you know, we're coming in on the 200th episode of this thing and over 300,000 listens. And I started this thing just because I knew the big, hairy, audacious goal is that there's got to be a better way. And then I started meeting these people and it was like connecting technology to handshakes is where it's at. And Urban Sim is truly in the middle of that. And then to go in and see if you can pencil that project out, it's genius. I just love the art of conversation, but truly, can we execute the project?
Yeah, and the other thing too, just about threads is, you know, Paul being a professor at Cal, and Cal has a great history of planning and architectural folks who have really influenced the industry. You know, you look at Christopher Alexander in a formative book with Pattern Language. You know, and I really think that Paul and his team are going to have that same level of influence on built form in the environment.
Yeah, so my last lesson learned is the statement that really resonated to me that I put down in my notes was, you have to discipline the process. But we don't know how a lot of the times, right? So we want to just go have successful projects. When he gives the case study to say the far left and the far right, we're actually disciplined to come together with the tool. Dude, that is gold, mind-blowing stuff. That's just so cool. So I call to action. Everybody go check this out. If you're not getting on these type of platforms, you're going to be left in the dust if you're working on these type of projects, right, Matt?
Absolutely. It's a way to differentiate yourself from the crowd. We all know how competitive the real estate, construction, and architecture industries are.
Awesome. Design, simulate, visualize. Great work, Paul. Crush it out there, Art of Construction Tribe.